Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Freedom!
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth, and waiting for my associate Christopher John O'Shea to show up tonight. He's stuck out there, and he's going to be a couple minutes late, but I'll do our introductions and begin our interview in just a second. You know, as a personal financial show, we do a lot of interviews, and we talk about a lot of varying topics, and tonight's topic is going to be on leadership. And it's important to understand leadership as when you're dealing with your personal finances, because you could either be running a business, and you better learn how to be a leader if you're running a business, or you could be working in a company where you're expected to be a leader, or if you want to progress in the company, you better be a leader, or you're investing in companies and you want to know that the people running your companies truly are leaders. And there is no name that exemplifies teaching about leadership and more divinely inspired than the name of Peter Drucker. And a book recently caught my eye. It's called A Year with Peter Drucker, 52 Weeks of Coaching for Leadership Effectiveness by Joseph Massarello, a Kumba, a good Italian Kumba. So I should have had Tom Bombasuto on the show with me tonight so that Tignanelli, Bombasuto, and Massarello could talk about leadership. Massarello could talk about leadership. So anyway, let me just tell you a little bit about Joseph. He's a Marie Rankin Clark Professor of Social Science and Management Emeritus and Senior Fellow at the Peter Drucker and Masatoshi Ito Graduate School of Management of Claremont Graduate University. He collaborated with Drucker on many publications, including The Effective Executive in Action, the Revised Edition of Management, and the Daily Drucker. And Joseph, are you there with me?
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for inviting me. Yes.
You know, Joseph, let me just, and my associate Chris is coming in and sitting down, so we'll, there was a sentence or two at the very beginning in the very first chapter, and I want to read that because, in my opinion, that one very first paragraph in your book, you know, spoke volumes. We could probably sit all day and just speak about this. You say, Peter Drucker had great hopes for business executives in the United States. These hopes gradually faded as he saw one scandal after another and as he found leaders to be self-serving. Drucker hoped that the large industrial organization would provide a place where employees could find community, citizenship, meaning, and purpose for their lives. Man, that says it all, doesn't it?
Well, it was a pretty powerful idea that he carried through most of his life. But you know, he did come out of Austria and Germany and was forced to leave. And did leave in 1932 because he was half Jewish, so he didn't want us to experience ever again what he went through in World War One with the Austria-Hungarian Empire falling apart, and eventually World War Two with the rise of Hitler. He read Mein Kampf and took it seriously, and got out.
He
went to England and actually worked as an investment banker, and then came to the United States and in 1937 married to his wife Doris, who just passed away at 103.
Well,
and was a financial correspondent for British newspapers. Yeah.
So let me ask you this question, just out of curiosity: did he ever reflect back on the leadership of the companies of the early 1900s, like Coca-Cola and Procter and Gamble and Gillette? These were run by people that seemed to have that focus. Did he ever reflect on that?
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, one of his better friends in America was Walter Wriston, who was the CEO and chairman of Citibank, what's now Citibank.
Right.
He and Walter commiserated many, many times, and they shared opinions, and iron sharpens iron, and he and Walter talked a lot about the role and nature of the CEO in America and in banking and so on. I know yours is a financial show, so I want to be sure to indicate his close connection to Walter Wriston. Walter died in 2005 in January, the same year that Peter Drucker died, only Peter Drucker died later in the year. But as you know, as the head of Citibank, he was a giant in banking.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
He initiated the automatic tellers. And, yeah, and he saw in Walter Wriston, of course, the kind of executive that that he was looking for. He saw that in Alfred Sloan at General Motors. He saw that in the executives who were running General Electric Company during the 50s. So, yes, he saw many, many exemplary leaders in business and continued to work with them later on in life. He was one of the close consultants to John Bachman, who built Edward Jones from a small brokerage firm to a I don't know how many brokers they have now, well over 10,000. So
how did you know Peter?
Well, I was a student at NYU, a graduate student, from 1966-7 to 1973. I was studying economics and a PhD. And Peter was at the business school there, the Graduate School of Business. He left in 1971, but he wrote a book in 1969, was called The Age of Discontinuity, and I read it as a graduate student in economics, thought it was all wrong. Later on in life, I began to think it was all right, and it was the economics that were wrong. But my history went back further. My very first job out of college in 1962 was working on the space program. And I happened to be a part of the group that worked on the portable life support system that Neil Armstrong wore on the moon's surface. So we were trying to, between the two stints I spent there in the 60s, we were trying to design a management system for managing this portable life support system. And we had only field manuals that NASA and that the Air Force System Command had put out. And they were very good, but they were very technique-oriented. And so I was single at the time, and I was forced to try to learn how to put a system around it. And our executive vice president, Ed Marshall, was a systems engineer and encouraged me to do that. And I began studying Drucker's work. And I told Drucker about it later on. He said, well, you had no choice. It was the only thing out, the practice of management in 1954. So I really knew Drucker first by his work. And then when I had the opportunity to come here to Claremont in 1979, I was at Union College in Schenectady, New York, and I took it for many reasons, the major professional reason. The major reason professional was because he was here. And I didn't know how long he was going to be here. He didn't know how long he was going to be here. But we ended up being colleagues for 26 years.
Wow.
And they were wonderful, wonderful years. And then the last 5 years of his life or so, 5 or 6 years, his mind was extraordinary still, but his legs were getting weak. I helped him do what he wanted done.
Yeah, you're going to have to hold on with me, Joseph, because we've got to take a pause here, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the 52 weeks. We're not going to get through all of them. I don't think we're going to get through all 52, but we'll at least do a few of them. Right now, we're going to go to Nick Rehak with traffic, and we'll be right back with Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're talking with Joseph Massarello, a year with Peter Drucker. And what he does is he takes 52 principles from Peter Drucker, and he says, you know, read one a week for 52 weeks and contemplate and soak in it and see how you can implement that strategy into your own life. And it's fascinating. We're not going to be able to get all 52, but I would strongly recommend that you look at getting a copy for yourself and do this 52 weeks. If you want to learn leadership principles from probably one of the most divinely inspired people on the topic of leadership,
oh, yeah.
I'd say that Peter Drucker is clearly it. And Joseph has done a magnificent job of putting those principles together. And Joseph, I want to start on the one about integrity. And I believe it's week five or something of that sort. And the thing that I found interesting there is you're comparing Cyrus, King Cyrus from the Medes and the Persians, and Harry Truman and the integrity of those two individuals to leadership today. Can you help me see that more? I mean, I understand it, but I want to hear your words on it.
There was the prophecy of Jeremiah that the Jews would the children of Israel would return from Babylon to their land after a 70-year period of exile, and it was Cyrus the Great who at that time had control over Babylon, and it was very benevolent and allowed the Israelites to go back to Jerusalem to what we know as Israel, and Drucker thought he was one of the great leaders of the world. Now Harry Truman, it turns out, was also one of Drucker's favorites, and Truman thought very, very highly of Cyrus. In fact, I think it was 11 minutes after Israel was declared a state, and Ben-Gurion did it, 11 minutes after that Truman recognized Israel, and that's the United States recognizing Israel.
And that was unpopular.
What?
That was unpopular.
Because it was a very unpopular decision because Marshall, who was then Secretary of State, was running the Marshall Plan, and they needed oil to fuel the development of Europe, and Marshall was against it. So it was a very unpopular and risky decision. But Truman, knowing the story of Cyrus and from the Bible, and knowing the history of Israel, knew that it was the right thing to do. And matter of fact, years later, near the end, after he left office, the prominent Jewish people wanted to honor him, and did at I think Union Theological Seminary there in New York, and introduced him as a great friend of Israel. And Truman said, "You're wrong. I'm Cyrus." it was that history, the linkage of those two men, that was very prominent in Harry Truman's decision. Harry was a very charactered man, and that's what I indicate in the book. I shouldn't call him Harry. President Truman.
You can call him Harry if you want. This is our show. We can let you do anything you want, Joseph.
No. He's a very, very charactered man, and he was he was concerned with doing the right thing. This is really important to integrity and character and so on. And character is linked to effectiveness. Now, Harry Truman wasn't very well prepared for the job. He was left out in the dark of most of the issues that Roosevelt was dealing with, and then Roosevelt died. And most of the issues he had to deal with were foreign policy related, so he went to school and he learned from Dean Acheson and others around. He learned foreign affairs and became one of the great leaders who wrapped up the war in Europe with Stalin and Churchill.
Well, let's go back to a more practical leadership thing, and that would be basically, I think it's week three. It's the practical concept of where a leader needs to know, what is my business? In other words, what am I supposed to be doing? Who's our customer? Who am I serving? And what do those people that I'm serving value? How do these practical things work to a person that is, whether they're a listener that running his own business or whether he's or she is in management of some sort and has to apply this leadership principle?
Yeah. I have, as I sit here, a poster with those three questions on it, and those three questions are very, very fundamental. They're human questions, and it's a calligraphy that was done for his 80th birthday in 1989. What is our business? And that's not always obvious what business we are in. Now, one of the examples I use is from a consulting experience that he has at ServiceMaster, where the board was wrestling is just what is the center of our business. And he said, you know, you're all wrong. After listening to him for a long while, he said, you're in the people development business. You know, you employ them in a lot of different ways, and your customers interact with these people, whether they're residential or whether they're in healthcare or whatever. And so it's your employees that need to be trained and developed to interact with your customers, because the customers consider the customers consider not only the final outcome, whether it's pest control or a clean airport facility, but they also value the character and the disposition of the person providing the service. So whatever organization you're looking at, you can apply those questions. Now, there is variation as you move from firm to firm, but what business are we really in? Say we're a brokerage business. What really is our business? Well, one answer might be to provide peace of mind.
Right.
Who is our customer? Well, our customers are generally people who are not experts in financial markets, and they need to be led and given confidence that the firm has their business at heart. What do they consider value? Well, again, value is the preservation of capital and meeting financial objectives as they go on over time. When you start with those questions, you don't start with our business is maximizing profit or making the most amount of money. That is a end of fulfilling those three questions. You do those three questions well, and you do them day after day. You end up doing all right financially. In fact, you have to do. Profit to Drucker was a requirement. It was necessary, of course, to stay in business and to continue to innovate and to develop your people and return provide a return to your investors and so on. So those three questions are really key.
Okay, so those three questions are, what is your business? Who are your customers, and what do they value? And then
yeah,
you got
to. That has to be asked for every business you're in. You can be in a multi-business firm.
Yeah. So, and you got to think about it. But you also have to figure out, well, as I develop this, how's it going to make revenue for the company so that we can continue to grow? Now, you have
Absolutely.
To hold on with me, Joseph, because right now we're at our second pause. Things always move fast when we have an interview going, and especially a good interview. So you're going to have to hold on to me. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about a couple more weeks from leadership training and how you take this book and you contemplate on it. A Year with Peter Drucker by Joseph Massarello. But right now, I'm going to Nick Rehack and Traffic, and I'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here. We're talking about a year with Peter Drucker. And, I mean, you know, again, I'm not exaggerating when I say there was no greater leader or teacher of leaderships that was more divinely inspired than Peter Drucker. And to this collection that Joseph has put together, 52 weeks of, you know, teachings from Drucker on 52 different integral concepts and the essays that Drucker wrote on these. And, you know, and you've got each week you anywhere from 3 to 5 or 10 or 15 different writings that he has on the topic, you know, that you
read. And, sure. Yeah. What really makes it great is you go down here and I'm looking at a list of all the books that Peter Drucker wrote between 1939 and his last one in 2004. They published one posthumously in 2008. Look at all those, and the book we're looking at now, A Year of Peter Drucker, is, you know, a compendium. I mean, this has taken all the best of, in effect, and putting them all into one book. And so in that, it's just you know, just encourage people to do that, because no one has written as widely on management and effectively and worked with the top people as Drucker did.
Right. So, Joseph, if you'll humor me for a second or two, I'm taking week 10, and it's information literacy for executive effectiveness. And you tell a little joke here. Or Drucker writes a joke, and it's actually from Peter Drucker, Executive Summary, A Conversation with Peter Drucker on Leadership and Organizational. And he's talking about, he's telling a joke, and he says, there's a famous old joke about leadership. A man in a hot air balloon gets lost over Kansas or Iowa, has no idea where he is or where he's going. He does not see anybody, nothing but grass. Finally sees a woman down in the field. He goes down and hollers to her, "Where am I? I'm already an hour late for an appointment." She hollers back, "You're at 42 degrees, 8 minutes and 4 seconds north latitude and 94 degrees longitude." He replies, "You must be an accountant." She says, "How did you know?" He says, "Your information is absolutely accurate and totally useless." Now, I'm an accountant. I'm a CPA personally. I took offense at that when I first read it, but then I went on to read the rest of it and I wasn't as offended. And then she says, "You must be an executive." And he says, "Yes, but how did you know?" She says, "You're higher up. You do not know where you are. You do not know where you're going. You're overscheduled, and you blame your subordinate, someone below you." I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
Anyway, Joseph, is that the kind of humor that Peter would use to teach people?
Yes, he was known for his humor, and he was known for his stories and in his epigrams, his pithy phrases. But yeah, that kind of tells it all. I've had so much fun with this particular topic, as I have with so many others. I am a sports fan of baseball, football, basketball, and I have been amazed at how information literacy has exploded. Of course, it's not unusual when you pay a lot of money for talent, but the whole Moneyball experience,
sure.
Billy Beane, which is based upon sabermetrics developed in 1980, and then the whole which is using different criteria to pick baseball players than the traditional ones used by the big market teams. And of course, Billy Beane did that very, very well, and they made the movie. But then he goes on to StatMat, where they're now beginning to try to assemble a group of players who play well together. We have always thought of baseball as an individual game. Well, not so. There's a symphony that needs to be created. Joe Torre writes about it in the Yankee years with a Sports Illustrated writer. So where big money is being put out for talent, and there's nothing like it
right.
In baseball and so on. And you're a small market team, and you got to figure out how to compete with New York and Washington and Boston and so on. Maybe Washington isn't that big a market team. I'm not sure. But certainly New York is, and that's where I'm from, New York State. You've got to kind of outflank your competitors, and you do it with information.
Right.
And he thought we were in the information age, and we needed to utilize. Get it and utilize it and make sure the right people who have to know it use it. I was watching again the Remember the Titans with Denzel Washington.
Yeah,
one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, and one of my favorites in 1971 in Alexandria, T.C. Williams, where Denzel comes up to the defensive coach and has all of the defensive strategies of all the teams except for the one they would face in a state championship. Well, that's what the coach did at Butler. That we mentioned in the reading, that is the power of information, but it has to be collected correctly and conveyed correctly to people who have to use it and they have to implement it. Yeah, and now we're getting into big data, like
right.
The national security NSR kind of stuff, where we can store data in the clouds. We have an enormous amount of data. We just have to put it together and then link it appropriately and gain competitive advantage by doing so. And I love the topic.
Yeah. So I'm going to go back to week 7 now. And you say manage in two dimensions. And I love Drucker's line here. And what he says is a manager must, so to speak, keep his nose to the grindstone while lifting his eyes to the hills. In essence, the way I interpret that is the manager has to be alert today and realize what he thinks is going to happen tomorrow all at the same time.
Yes, that is exactly the point. And it's kind of like quite an act.
Yeah. He says it's quite an acrobatic feat, is the last phrase.
Well, you
have
to meet the short-term requirements of your constituents while not giving up the whole basis for the firm, which is longer term. And so it's funding your future while protecting your present. Yeah. Managing in two dimensions, the short term and long term. And it's very, very hard to do, especially with the pressures that executives feel from shareholders.
Sure. So many companies are solely focused on what are my earnings going to be next quarter, and that's all they care about.
Well, you know, I was listening to Clay Christensen on a YouTube thing, and he's written a lot about innovation at Harvard Business School, and his take on it was, okay, let's let the shareholders worry about their needs for returns and so on and so forth. And not too many of them care about how corporations are run, but let's in the corporation run it wisely. And that would be for both nose to the ground and eyes on the hills.
Let me ask you a quick question. It just came to my mind. We were talking earlier about the leadership and the failing of leadership. Did Drucker know any of these young guys that were coming up, like the Google guys and people like that? Because these young people that are running these tech companies now, they seem to be different focus than the guys that were more the 70s and 80s and 90s.
Well, the answer is that he knew quite a few people. He never lost touch with Andy Grove was one that founded Intel that he knew very well. But he didn't know the Google and Apple people very well. I think he knew Scully. He didn't know Jobs. The Gates thought Drucker was the best when it came to writing. But the thing that's noticeable to me is how much the Facebook guy
Zuckerberg.
How much he loved what he was doing.
Right.
In other words, what got him into the business? Did he get into the business to make a lot of money? No. He got into the business to provide a social network when he was at Harvard. And
right.
It just grew and grew and grew and grew and grew. And you find that in so many of these new high-tech startup firms. Now, eventually, they need the investment bankers, and they need, you know, the professional resources, and then they get into the corporate routines, and then the act becomes, how do you keep the innovation going while you're paying attention to all your constituents that you're beholden to because you're now a public firm?
Right.
That begins to change. And if you solidify, as Apple did, at once Steve Jobs left at first, they kind of solidified, things don't work so well. And then he came back, and he was kind of a disturbing element. And that's what Drucker talked about, the need for a disturbing element to come in to shake things up and to make sure that firms do not become bureaucratic, organizations do not become bureaucratic, they do not lose their first love, which for Zuckerberg, of course, was reaching, connecting people.
Right. You have to hold on for me now, Joseph,
yes,
because we've got one last break to take, and then we're going to be right back. Right now, we're going to Mark Thibodeau, and traffic will be right, no, weather. We'll be right back.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're with Joseph Massarello, and we're talking a year with Peter Drucker, 52 weeks of coaching for leadership, effectiveness, and it's a way to, you know, every week you just soak in one of these principles that he writes about. It's fantastic. And anyway, Joseph, I noticed that somewhere, in the last 15 years of Peter's life, he pretty much pulled away from corporate America and went to work more with nonprofits, churches, and things of that sort. Did I get that right?
See, his fundamental concern was that that America, which he found to be a very sweet country when he came here in 37, had turned sour, he thought a lot that had a lot to do with leadership and mm-hmm. the way our leaders were becoming more functionary than true mission or purpose-driven leaders.
Less statesman.
In the end, then, to try to find examples and to work with people and people who came to him, because remember, he was in his 80s and 90s at that
right.
time.
Right.
And so he began working with the Salvation Army and with the Girl Scouts and with Catholic Charities, and they began working with this megachurch phenomena. Rick Warren and people like that, yes, and Bob Buford, who was a philanthropist, who exemplifies financial independence—a person who made his money in the cable business and then turned to philanthropy.
So let me ask you real quickly. Then what he says it here. I'm reading this from Drucker himself. I'm going to make myself very unpopular in 2 weeks in Aspen at the seminar where I'm the keynote speaker by saying we have no economic problems. We have only social problems, but we have those in spades. So what was it that he was concerned about? You know, I mean, what were the things that you felt?
That was 93. I'm very familiar with that. That's 93. Remember, now he's coming out of a World War One, Nazi kind of plus Nazi kind of environment where he saw civilizations collapse.
Right.
And he's looking at the United States, and he's seeing problems in healthcare. He's seeing problems in education. He's seeing problems in the inner city. With the breakup of the family and single parent families and the growth in welfare and the way democracies have always kind of gone bad is people have voted for largesse for themselves.
Yep.
So he saw that we were losing our rooting in our traditional values, which Jefferson stated, Lincoln, restated, these traditional values were really rooted in, in America at least, in the Judeo-Christian tradition. And not that the founding fathers were all that makeup, but they basically held these civic virtues, what we call small r, Republican virtues. And he thought we were losing that.
Right.
And that was the fundamental. That was the working philosophy on which this nation was built. And if we continue to lose it, we're going to be done. So he started to work with organizations that were beginning to fill the vacuum that exemplify those values, and that were none that he loved more than the Salvation Army, for example, and these 28 Joan and Ray Croft, Ray and Joan Croft development centers that are in the inner cities. Joan Croft left $1.5 billion, which when it matured was $1.84 billion, and 28 development centers in the inner cities of America.
Wow.
How wonderful. How wonderful.
Yeah.
You see?
Let me...
We're rebuilding community, and we're building it. And he saw that happening in the social sector. And there's just one more thing. These organizations are very mission and purpose driven.
Yep.
And all I can tell you is that from all the evidence I have looked at, and I have spent 6 or 7 years with this information, the people who hold their values strongly are likely to make an impact.
Wow.
Okay? And so that's what he found, and that's what he hoped would return to the private sector and to government.
So,
yeah,
I agree wholeheartedly, and unbelievably, we only have like 2 minutes left, and I just want to read this one quote from, I guess it was a revised edition that you published about leadership. It's probably the best definition of leadership I've ever read. It says, "Leadership is lifting a person's vision to higher sights, the raising of a person's performance to a higher standard, the building of a personality beyond its normal limitation." I mean, that's just, if that isn't divinely inspired, I don't know what is.
That's it. And it comes from, you see, it comes from holding values that people and purposes that people share with you. And it comes from building trust. Leadership is earning trust, mm-hmm. you know, and bringing people along with you. Yeah. Lifting them beyond where they thought they could go. I know it's true because it happened to me.
Yeah.
And it happened to me because I had the good fortune to work with Peter Drucker.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's a principle that our firm has always held, is that, you know, the people that come to work for us are not people for me to try to figure out how can I get the most out of them for me. It's my job to figure out how can I make them the most they can be, whether that benefits us or not. That, to me, is what leadership is all about, and I thought Drucker said it beautifully right there.
Well, you've said it beautifully, too, yeah.
Well, Joseph, I really appreciate you being with us. It's been a heck of a career for you to spend so much time with such an impressive person. And you yourself, obviously, have picked up these great leadership skills.
Well, it was a great gift for me, and I thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
Not a problem. We appreciate your time. And unfortunately, we're almost out of time. We only have a few seconds left. Chris, next week, I guess we're just doing an open show.
We are.
All right, you're in the middle of tax season.
Fun stuff. Great stuff is what.
And I am too. So what am I talking about?
That's one thing. In a backhanded way, we appreciate the IRS and Congress to make it the Accountants Full Employment Act.
There
you know?
You go, Joseph. We really appreciate you being with us, and God bless. And this
God
is Drew Bliss.
You too, and thank you so much.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless. Take care. Radio Station.